Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, it's a big week for the biggest companies in the world. The giants of US tech are updating investors on their performance and the stakes couldn't be higher. That's our focus today, although we'll spend a bit of time as well on the latest woes for UK shares. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. Are you ready for the big market-moving news coming out of the US this week? No, it's not the latest from the US presidential election, but reporting season for US tech. Most of the FAN companies and Microsoft update investors this week. It is this small group of mega-sized companies which has turned a potentially disastrous year into one of only small losses and perhaps even a slight gain. They've made up most of the running this year, and a stumble for any one of them could have a meaningful impact on markets. So to discuss that, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Tom, let's start, if we can, with why this all matters. I've outlined it there in my introduction, I guess. But the latest stats that I've seen about these giant FAN companies, that they take up something like a quarter of the S&P 500 by value. They also represent about a third of the gains made by the S&P in the past 5 years. Stock market gains have really relied on these companies, haven't they? And that's why their performance this week really matters.
Yes, I mean, it's quite something, isn't it? I mean, what you said there, that these FANG stocks, just five companies out of a total of 500 in the S&P index, representing about a quarter of the value of that index. So, you know, that's a staggering sort of domination of a small group of companies. And it's not just the size, as you say, it's the fact that they have driven all of the performance. You know, if you look at, I've been looking at charts of the US market recently, and, you know, the divergence in performance between those tech stocks, in particular, the NASDAQ index, and, you know, other parts of the US market, in particular, the smaller companies, the more domestically focused smaller companies, has really been dramatic this year. It's all been about tech so far this year.
Yeah, and, you know, just further on that concentration point, I mean, I was doing a bit of reading ahead of this, of recording today, and actually, there's been plenty of times in the past when we've had this concentration of an index among a small group of companies. I mean, that's sort of, it's always a bit like that because you have very large companies and much smaller ones. But I was reading that back in the 60s, we had a similar situation. In fact, a higher level of concentration, I think. IBM was a bigger company in 1967 than Apple is today, certainly in terms of the amount of the index it takes up. But as you touched upon there, Tom, it really does feel particularly precipitous right now because so much else in the market is really unloved right now. It's an underperformed, and it's these companies making the running. And if any of them stumble, it's not quite clear what else is going to step up to drive returns.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there has been a major divergence between sectors so far this year, and certain parts of the market are clearly out of favour. I mean, you look at what's happened with the oil price; that's had a knock-on effect on the energy sector, which of course is already suffering from this sort of shift, you know, because of climate change, this investor shift away from fossil fuel companies. The banks is another sector which has not done at all well, and that's, you know, partly because of the low interest rate environment. So yeah, the overall market is highly dependent on the performance of these tech stocks, and that does make the overall market vulnerable to any change in that environment. Yeah, and I was just to sort of finish up on that point that you made about IBM and back in the 60s and 70s, you know, there was this period where they called it the Nifty 50. You know, it was a small group of stocks was really very dominant in terms of you know, share of the market and performance of the market. And of course, 20 years ago, we had something very similar when, you know, we also had a technology focus in the late 1990s in the dot-com bubble. But even then, the share of those top five companies, it was high. It was about 18%, I think, but it was still less than we've got currently.
Yeah, and we should probably say here that let's sketch out the companies we're talking about. The FANGs, F-A-A-N-G, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google. Obviously, Google is represented by Alphabet in the stock market. That's that would be another ATOM, so it wouldn't fit the acronym, so we have to just call it Google for this. And we also, another inconvenience is that we have Microsoft, which gets lumped in there as well, so I don't know how you make an acronym out of that. But they're the companies we're talking about, and actually one of those reported, in fact, last week, and that was Netflix. And I wanted to talk about that briefly because that, I think, demonstrated what is at stake here with these giant tech companies. Revenues were good at Netflix. It's obviously, you can imagine, had a good pandemic. All those people staying at home looking for things to do that don't cost as much as going out. And Netflix subscriptions were up, but not as much as people expected them to be up. And as a result, the shares fell 6%, which is quite dramatic. And I guess that really does show that there isn't room really at all for any disappointment when prices are this high.
Well, it's all about expectations, isn't it? I mean, the stock market looks ahead, it anticipates. So it's not just the results that a company is announcing, it's how those results compare with expectations. Now, you know, we're about a quarter of the way through earnings season, third quarter earnings season. And the good news is that about 80% of companies that have announced their figures so far have beaten expectations, and they've done it by about 18 percentage points. So that's a pretty significant beat of analysts' expectations. So that's the good news. The bad news is that, you know, with these very highly rated companies at the top of the market, these tech stocks that we're talking about here, they really do need to exceed expectations if they're not going to disappoint investors. And I think in the case of Netflix, that's what happened. Expectations are very high, and we'll see, you know, we'll see later on this week when we have a lot of other tech stocks announcing their figures, you know, just how well they managed to meet expectations.
Yeah, and we should tell everyone we're recording this on Wednesday, so what we say here does stand to be overtaken by events rather quickly, because we've got as you say, Thursday is the big day for tech results. We've got Amazon, Facebook, Alphabet, Apple, and Microsoft reporting. What can we say, Tom, about the expectations for those companies? I mean, obviously we don't know exactly what's going to happen, and it will be out of date, but just in general, they've obviously had, as I've said, you know, good pandemic from the point of view that they're in demand. But really, what are the pressures, what is the market waiting to see with these companies that could potentially blow them off course?
Well, it's interesting. We talk about these companies as a homogenous group, as the FANGs, you know, the tech stocks, but they're all very different types of company, really. I mean, their interests range from, software to hardware. Some of them are you know, essentially advertising groups. I mean, that's the case with Alphabet. Amazon, as you say, has had a very good pandemic. It's probably, you know, it's the kind of poster child of stocks which you would expect to have done well in an environment where people are stuck at home and leading a much more digital life. But I think it's a mixed bag of expectations, because these are very different companies, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I was writing about these companies this week and yeah, they've all got slightly different questions to answer. I mean, you know, let's start. Yeah, Amazon, as you say, is the one that seems to have just gone from strength to strength, with seemingly no end of room to move into as a company. You know, think of all the extra things we buy through Amazon these days. Well, there's still plenty that we don't buy, so there's room there, isn't there, for it to grow. Facebook, you know, this year had a bit of a slowdown in its users. I guess people will be watching that. With Apple, it's always the case, no matter how diverse and complicated a business it now is, it still very much depends on iPhone sales, doesn't it? And the iPhone 12, the newest handset, was delayed, and that may have hurt sales. I wanted to ask you, Tom, about Google more specifically, because it has, as they all have, tough targets to meet in terms of ad revenue. But it's got some legal difficulties on the horizon, and I think these perhaps point to some of the longer term challenges. Forget tomorrow and this week, some of the longer term challenges that these companies face.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the regulation of these companies is coming more and more to the fore, and I think we haven't talked about the US presidential election coming up next week, but the treatment of technology stocks has been a key point of difference between the two sides. Not so much Joe Biden actually as some of his colleagues on the Democratic ranks, have been pretty vocal about what they think about the increasing power of these companies. We know that with Google, it is facing a legal action from the US Justice Department, basically accusing the company of running a monopoly in its search engine results. And, that case could drag on for years. The taxation of these companies is an issue not just in the US, but globally. I mean, the Europeans are looking very hard at these companies and saying, are they really paying their fair share? So I think that's another cloud hanging over the sector, is the extent to which the regulators come after these companies in years to come.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I've been banging on for years about Google and the comparison with something like Standard Oil. Decades and decades ago, when that was eventually broken up on antitrust grounds in the US, basically it was too big and too powerful, so they thought they had to do something about it. So these companies in their different areas of industry can be accused of the same thing. Google's the one that has been accused of it, but Amazon, who competes with Amazon really when it comes to online retail?
That's a very interesting question that you raised there about the breakup of these companies, because actually you mentioned Standard Oil, but more recently back in the 1980s the telecoms giants were broken up in the US. It doesn't always lead to a bad outcome for investors, actually, because sometimes the sum of the parts can be greater than the whole, and I think that was probably the case both with oil and with telecoms, actually, 60 years later.
Yeah, and let's be clear, we're not suggesting this is about to happen. As you say, if anything were to come of this legal challenge, and I guess Google had the money to hire quite good lawyers, it's not going to happen for an awfully long time, and there'll be a lot of nervous around it. It's been the elephant in the room with tech for years, really, hasn't it? That they get so big that they get too big to actually cut down to size, if you see what I mean. It becomes too painful to actually do it. But if regulator attention and government attention, particularly on the tax question, gains some traction, then we could get action against them. And that could be a dot on the horizon for these.
Yes, and at the very least, it argues for not falling completely in love with these stocks and massively overpaying for them, because the outlook is not completely, it's not a completely clear blue sky, let's put it that way.
No, and that takes me really to how we want to end this conversation, Tom, which is about what investors are supposed to do here, because you can't ignore these companies. I mean, even if you buy the index, as we've been saying, you're getting an awful lot of them. But elsewhere in the market doesn't look particularly appetizing either. Is it just a question of diversification and sort of hanging on for some kind of rotation?
Yes, I mean, I think just hopping back to that US presidential election next week, I think it's a very significant event from a market perspective, because I think the outcome of that election will determine in large part the scale of any fiscal stimulus that we get in the early part of next year. And certainly the macroeconomic analysts here at Fidelity have done quite a lot of work on this recently, and what they're suggesting is that were there to be a big so-called blue sweep, so the Democrats winning both the White House but also control of the Senate to add to their control of the House of Representatives that they already have, then we could be looking at a very sizable piece of fiscal stimulus spending by the government. The number which our guys have put on this is $8 trillion over 4 years. That's a massive amount of money. And also, of course, there are plenty of other options, including Donald Trump winning. In the middle, we've got the possibility of Joe Biden winning but not winning control of the Senate, or just scraping home with control of the Senate and not having such a free rein to spend. So there are a lot of different possible outcomes here. But in all of those cases, I think we are looking at more spending, more stimulus, more of a boost to the economy. And in that circumstance, I think, you know, we may get this fabled rotation from growth to value that we've talked about and has never really arrived. But were that to happen, then I think that has a great significance for these technology stocks that we're talking about, because the need for investors to shelter, if you like, in these high growth companies, if the overall economy is growing faster because of stimulus, is diminished. And that might, you know, alongside the regulation and the sheer overvaluation of some of these stocks, might lead to better performance elsewhere in the market.
Yeah, it's a good point. I guess that's, you know, for anyone, this is the last time we'll speak on the podcast before that election, Tom. And for people, investors looking out, you know, especially in this country, looking out for what the market might be looking at. As you say, it isn't really necessarily the headline. Well, of course, it is the headline, you know, who enters the White House. But it's more to do with, can the president, whoever that is, push through their spending plans? They need a supportive Senate to do that. If they don't have a supportive Senate, then we risk big delays and a smaller stimulus. There'll be those, I mean, you know, people may remember debt ceiling gridlocks in the Senate a few years ago. That could happen again in just over a year's time. So it's really the ease with which whoever is president is able to spend which market's probably going to take most attention to.
Yes, I mean, the key feature of the American political system is that it was designed, you know, 200 years ago, in order to control, to restrain, you know, to not to put too fine a point on it, mad, bad, or dangerous presidents from doing, you know, bad things. And, you know, so there are lots of checks and balances built into the system. The good side of that is that, you know, you don't get, bad people doing bad things. The bad aspect of it is that gridlock is the default situation in Washington, and very often you get these situations you know, where it's very difficult for an agenda to be pushed through.
It's a good reminder to hold on to your hats for a week or so. I actually just wanted to, one final thing to slip in here, Tom, because I did promise that we would have a brief look at the UK. It's shaping up to be one of those weeks to forget, isn't it, for UK and European shares, actually. What's pushing markets lower? I mean, we've got some bad news, of course, but when don't we have some bad news on the pandemic? Why are markets particularly gloomy this week?
Well, I think there are four things driving markets at the moment. We've talked about two of them. You know, there's the US election, earnings season. We've discussed those. The two that we haven't really discussed are the COVID pandemic and Brexit, of course. And I think that, you know, in a European context, those are the key drivers of this sort of increased volatility this week, in particular COVID. You know, we have got a rather nasty uptick in infections right the way across the region. That is feeding through into more clampdowns on activity in various countries, and that of course has economic implications. And I think that's the concern. Investors, over the summer we had this sort of this illusion that maybe, you know, it's all going to be over by Christmas. I think now people are coming round to the conclusion that this is not going to be over until we get a vaccine. That's a rather different position that we find ourselves in.
Indeed, indeed. Well, on that rather gloomy note, Tom, that is all that we have time for. Thanks an awful lot for joining me.
Thanks, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.